Welcome back to Derry Public Radio. Reporting from the basement of the Derry Civic Center, this is CM Alexander with the news. Derry Public Library's annual Dodge Book Tournament has once again set the world of books on fire, but in a good way. We take you live to sports correspondent Dr. John Hellajohn.
Thanks, CM. Tonight we saw the fabled tortoises Aesop the floor with Danish league champions the Brittle Mermaids. While watching these two teams slug it out was like a fairy tale to see, I can't help but wonder if the match had gone differently if their best player hadn't missed his flight. More like Hans missed in action, son. Am I right? Right? CM?
You're listening to Derry Public Radio. This is Derry Public Radio. Welcome back to Derry Public Radio, March Madness 2024. I am one of your hosts, CM Alexander, alongside Joshua Kahn.
Hey, everybody.
And Benjamin Graham.
Hey, concert readers.
And we are back with our seeds, and they're fighting, their limbs are being torn off, there's blood everywhere, there are tentacles, there's prayer, there's green blobs of fire being shot at people, there's batteries. There's telekinesis, there's mazes.
And Gandalf the Grey and Gandalf the White and Monty Python and the Girls Are Night.
Ben, I got on a musical reference with you, like,
yes.
On it. That's the first time I think that's ever happened in 5 years.
It definitely
years.
Didn't happen the multiple times I referenced it last episode.
You didn't start singing it last time.
Fair.
Yes, we are back with our second round of March Madness. Unofficially brought to you by the Moxie that we just drank. Because as you may have known, listeners, that we've been covering 11-22-63, they talked about Moxie, and I was too curious. I like the little ice clinky sounds.
We'll see if I like that.
I was so curious that I had to buy some and so we could try it. I'm so glad that we did.
Me too. It's good. It's weird.
It is definitely weird.
I like it.
All right. This time, we are going to do our second half of the... wait, hold on. Shit.
CM learned so much about brackets that you lost it all.
I took his knowledge. See?
Yep, that's...
Sacrificed that's what it happened. All. You're a good friend.
All right, we're going to get in the second half of our Sweet 16. So on this episode, we are going to be seeing the deathmatch fights between... Annie Wilkes and Carrie White, Rose the Hat and Lisey Landon, Ellen Rimbauer and Beverly Marsh, and Holly Gibney versus Julie Lawrie.
Wow.
Rimbauer.
Rose Red.
Ah, okay.
Wait, who from Rose Red?
The house lady.
Yeah, the house.
The house.
Oh man. I blacked out that whole thing.
Yeah.
You were very sick.
Shall we get into it?
Yeah.
Our first matchup of the evening, Annie Wilkes versus Carrie White. And as Carrie White is our lower seed, this fight will take place in the high school gymnasium.
At the prom.
Yeah. Decorated for prom.
Interesting.
Wow. Annie Wilkes has a little bit of that, like, proper judgment the way Carrie's mother does.
That's alarmingly true.
Dirty pillows?
Yeah.
I could see her saying that.
I think... Oh my God.
Ooh, fuck.
Yeah. Annie Wilkes and Margaret White would have probably gotten along in a really unpleasant way.
I do not want to read that book.
No.
Annie Wilkes is one of the women that Ralph cheated on Margaret with because he has a type.
Wow.
I hate that.
I do too.
Do you want to hear about the time they tied for three ways? No, sorry.
What?
No, nothing. Nothing. Never mind.
Cut it. Cut it all.
We have to leave. And I live here. I love Annie. Like, the spirit, you know, is there. But she doesn't have telekinesis. It's similar to Charlie. It would have to be wits or being an imposing mother-like figure to try to steer her from the course. But... I don't feel like much could in that moment.
If we're drawing Annie in from the moment that's pure Annie, what's she wielding at the time? Like, obviously she's in an episode, Annie, for sure. She's in that state. But are we hobbling scene, Annie? Are we run a man over in a lawnmower, Annie?
I do think the hobbling scene is the scariest version of Annie. It is the after the depressive drop. She's just come back from her laughing place, and she has that stoniness of resolve of I've thought long and hard about it, and I know that this is the right course of action for me to cause incredible violence.
So Annie shows up with an axe and a blowtorch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which the blowtorch isn't going to do a lot of good here.
No. Oh, man. I think Annie gets some good hits in, but really just gets her ass kicked.
It's hard to tell. Because I also think, I don't think Annie would be a villain if she existed in Carrie. Does that make sense?
No,
she wouldn't be. I'm thinking about Carrie's villains. Uh-huh. Her, the people that she is lashing out against are the people that mistreated her. I don't believe Annie would have been a person that had mistreated Carrie.
But not everybody in the gymnasium did either. And the gym teacher didn't. Point. She kills everybody. So I think Annie Wilkes merely being in the gym at the time, she would just be the casualty.
I think what it's going to come down to for me is that Margaret White almost killed Carrie. And Annie is way more scary.
That's true.
Because I think that, well, I mean, we're taking Carrie's hesitation off the table too.
Yeah, because in the gym, if her mom was in the gym at that time.
Yeah, I don't know if she would have given it a second thought
if
her mom was in the gym.
So do we go with timing over acknowledging a flaw, a weakness?
Well, Sam, you have the first vote of this round. So you tell us.
You know, obviously Carrie.
Carrie White, Ben?
Yeah, I think that as much as it would be cool. Now, once again, if this was, as I tried to set up in the last episode, that if this is on fighting game rules, then... They're way closer because Annie will just be like a brawler or whatever, grappler or something, and could get in close and cause some damage. But if we're just talking in the universes of these books, it's Carrie 100%.
Carrie will be advancing, but assuredly not without some damage.
Josh, how long until our listeners force you to create this on Dairy Fight Night?
The new game comes out end of March, I think. So listeners, if you want to come to us on Patreon and send me money for the new game, I'll make this whole thing happen right then.
There you go.
Our next bout is Rose the Hat versus Lisey Landon. And because Lisey is the lower seed, this fight takes place in Booyah Moon.
Cool.
Yes, this is awesome. Okay.
Ben, any opening statements?
Yes. Remember how when she turns into her monster form, Rosie the Hat has one big tooth? Yeah. That's fucking stupid. That's all I have to say is dumb. I think about that sometimes and I'm like, I get what they're going for. And I guess, it's scary. It's a scary monster face. But in my head,
I know
Lady in a Hat with one big tooth.
I know you're going to get this reference, Ben, because it's from The Simpsons.
Sure.
But when I think of that from Rose the Hat, I think of
when Maggie turns into Kodos and Kang's baby and she has the one big tooth.
Honestly, that would be a better reference.
Mm.
I was thinking when they go to Cletus and the Hillbillies, the guy who has Old Chomper who just puts his tooth through the top of cans to open them. That's what I think of.
You guys already figured this out. It's Nightflyer.
It is Nightflyer, yes.
Yeah.
So that is effective. And
scary. I understand that it would be scary, but also just the phrase one big tooth is
it's a hard image to conjure and it not seems
be a little silly.
Oh my god. Rose is this like mental creature too, right? What would she do with the long boy or any of the shrouded figures?
Interesting.
I don't know that Booyah Moon is as much an advantage as maybe we think.
Huh. That's tricky.
Okay.
I don't know if Rose can, if she'd be able to basically draw on the power of the world like Abra would in her own imagination, like that way.
I think they're in Booyah Moon. The long boy shows up and tries to eat Rose the Hat. Rose the Hat tries to siphon off the long boy's weird Booyah Moon energy. And then they get married.
Or she becomes the long girl.
I thank you for that reaction, Josh. And anti thank you for the phrase the long girl.
Hey, you get a little bit of everything when we're all together. Why I'm the crude one and not the sweet one, I don't know.
Because I'm busy being the sweet one. Now, here's how I think Lisey could take the win. Because obviously, power level wise, Rose has the obvious advantage. So I'm going to make my argument for the underdog. If Lisey can move this fight to the pool, I think because of how long Rose has been alive, how much she has experienced, the mesmerization of the pool would have so much more to show her.
Yeah.
Distract her long enough for her to take that shovel and just bash that hat off the top of her stupid head. And I'm pretty sure if you knock the hat off, she dies. I'm not positive.
I think that's how the book
She's allowed to take it off herself, but if you knock it off, I think. And then if it lands on a pile of snow.
Yeah, it comes to life.
It comes to life.
Goes on adventures.
Yes.
I love all of that. And it just won me over. I can't even think of a good
This is a tip for anyone. If you're ever trying to get CM to vote on your side, just weave a fancy enough tale and she's instantly in.
I'm a sucker for a good story. I sincerely can see Lisey doing that though and succeeding because we've seen her do it.
She's laid a trap in Booyah Moon before.
And I do agree with you. I feel like the pool would have a just very strong mesmerizing quality over Rose the Hat. She would probably just see a ship full of children waiting to be sucked.
Moving on. I'm gonna go ahead and vote for Lisey just because of how much I friggin' hate Rose the Hat.
You know what? I'm gonna vote for Lisey.
Good.
And a shovel's such a cool fucking weapon.
Mm-hmm. Just I have this in my head, you know, Rose is slowly stepping down, being mesmerized, and then she gets knocked in the back of the head, and Lisey just holds her head under. Our next fight, we have Ellen Rimbauer, the matriarch of Rose Red, versus Beverly Marsh. And because this fight, Beverly Marsh is the lower seed, where's this fight gonna take place, guys?
In the treehouse, underground.
Ooh, that's very confined. I'm into it.
How's the house gonna fit?
The treehouse is bigger on the inside.
It's like in the middle of the ritual.
It's during the campfire. Yeah.
The ritual of Chud. Yeah. So the stage is all like smoky, but in the background you see the ancient skies over what will become Maine.
Yep. You know, I
want to play this game so bad.
I have a pitch. To move this fight to a much more interesting for both sides. If we're talking about the moment when they're at their peak power, Beverly Marsh drawing blood on Pennywise, she's the first one who does it at the house on Niebolt Street.
Ooh.
Oh. Ellen Rimbauer in a haunted house.
In the house.
That could be fun.
All right.
I'm clinging to this. Ellen Rimbauer is the house.
Which room is she at this time of the fight?
It's a weird, like, in fighting games, sometimes they'll do a character that's just like really out there mechanically. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you're fighting whatever stage you're in and just like launch chairs and couches at your enemy. And what the fuck happens in Rose Red?
I still the don't house, know who the she house, is.
She builds the house. Oh, she has to keep taking men she kills the men. Right. So that the spirits of the men.
No, but I mean, what happens in Rose Red, the movie?
There's a people counter machine.
It's haunted. The house changes.
Cowboy.
Doesn't a fridge attack that nerd at one point?
He sees a head in the fridge.
Okay.
He gets his fingers cut off in a door. And his mom drives a scoot about.
It's all we need to know.
And Bones is there. And there's the one guy who's pout when they are doing the go around the table and say what your mutant power is. We laughed because the guy's like, I'm a touch no. Like, that's the
dumbest name. I resent that we are recapping that fucking show.
Instead of rewatching it, you're absolutely right.
No. Let's
for $100 on Patreon.
$100.
You
no
can
less.
Make us rewatch
no,
it.
No, 500.
Okay, so Ellen Rimbauer is like the ghost of the old lady that built the house. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
So we'll say in the house on Niebelt Street, she can manipulate the house. She
sure.
can't create the way she could create in her own house. She can...
She make the floor fall out from under Beverly.
Yeah. Or she can try.
Oh, I see who you're rooting for.
It's not her house. I don't know what her powers are.
This is always a challenge with the March Madness episodes. Because at a certain point, I'm just like, well, I know who I want to win. So well, I'm just going to justify yeah. that they win.
Ben, that's what every single discussion is.
That's fair. Because, yeah, Beverly, obviously.
Well, like with It, who, if you don't know what happened, you would just see these two pit against each other and you'd think, wow, there's no way she could, a little girl with no powers could win against this timeless creature. But she did, because she understood its strengths and weaknesses and how to defeat it. All she has to do is figure that out about Ellen.
Sounds like we're all on the same page here. Beverly Marsh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's go with it.
I'm not going to think about Rose Red anymore to try and come up with a justification that this character I did not remember after being told her name three or four times.
Guys, we're rewatching Rose Red at some point.
You say that.
I'll live stream it and just have you guys watch it. Our final fight for this round. Man, this is going to be a tough one. We have Holly Gibney versus Julie Lowry. From The Stand.
Yeah. Thank you.
The actress?
Are you not thinking Shawnee Smith?
Yes. Wait, which one's Julie?
Julie's the one that shoots
is played
at Nick
by
and...
Shawnee Smith.
Okay, that's what... Oh my god. I just confused her real name for her character. That's Shawnee Smith. I mean, she just becomes that character so well. So if this is Shawnee fighting, she can do anything.
Honestly, this might be a controversial take. I like the CBS Julie Lowry better than Shawnee Smith's Julie Lowry. The CBS one, she just got so much more time.
Yeah.
And she got to do all the more insane shit for Julie Lowry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember anything about the CBS The Stand.
We should watch it.
The Sit.
Listen to our episodes on The Sit.
And now as this, Julie Lowry is our lower seed. So this fight is going to take place in an abandoned shopping center.
In an abandoned town.
In an abandoned town.
I'm going to have trouble with this one because I have read so much fewer Holly Gibney stories than you, Josh. I assume you've read all of them by this point. I haven't read Holly. You hadn't read Holly? Okay.
I'm saving reading Holly for all of us.
Okay. So I don't have a full scope of her like feats. You know, I don't know what all, I don't know, maybe in Holly she gets some, she destroys a town with a single punch or something. I don't know.
What we have seen from Holly is her braining humans and monsters alike with a happy slapper.
She has skill when it comes to fighting the supernatural. Mm-hmm. Shawnee, because now Julie, has skill aligning herself with the supernatural.
True. And that home field advantage, she has been weaving her way around the shopping center so she could have the element of surprise in her hands.
Could she also have some of the powers of Flag on her side?
She Such ever as? Have powers of Flag?
No, but just thinking about how
she just had a rifle.
How he's manipulated the world on occasion or what people see. Like he's given Molly Ringwald. I can't remember anybody's character name tonight. Only their real names. The dreams
Franny.
And stuff. Franny, yeah. Could he do something like that? Could that be a weapon against...
Okay. What's your pitch?
Here's... Can I...
Yeah. Yeah.
Real quick. Here's my thing. Here's my thought of how the fight goes. They're in this shop. And so Julie is, like we see in the 90s, the Stand up in a window with a rifle shooting at Holly, and Holly is weaving through trying to get to her. Here's the thing. We've seen Holly do that.
That's true. Yeah.
That's the end of the Outsider. Like, there's a guy with a rifle trying to shoot her. And
Mercedes?
Is that at the end of Miss Mercedes? No, that's Outsider. At the end of Outsider.
Because they're in quarry kind of place.
Yeah. Because we've seen her kick ass in Mr. Mercedes, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. But I'm specifically having someone at a position, a sheltered position with a high-powered rifle, and she made it through.
True.
So I don't think...
That's a good point.
I think Holly's got the edge. And especially in this instance.
Julie would be just screaming and cackling like a psychopath the whole time.
Oh, yeah. She wouldn't be...
She'd be giving her position away.
Wasn't that cop, like, screaming about his... skin boiling off? Or what?
I think that was his internal screaming.
Well, I'm just saying she'd be giving herself away to Holly. Mm-hmm. So I think you're...
And Holly's smart and patient.
Yes.
You know, she'd find her opportunity. She'd strike as opposed to Julie Laurie, who would just be walking through firing randomly. Or
she has Harley Quinn energy.
She does, without having Harley Quinn intelligence.
Or charm.
She has a PhD.
Julie Laurie?
Harley Quinn. Keep up, Ben. We're talking about Harley.
Yeah, keep up. I think Holly Gibney. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah,
for
Holly.
Sure.
But man, all right. This round was not as hard as I thought it would be for all of us. We all pretty much landed on the same page through this entire round.
I think this last episode's going to suck. Based
on that. It's going to be interesting. So let's recap who will be facing off in the quarterfinals next episode. We have Charlie McGee versus Dana Jurgens, Bobby Anderson versus Abra Stone, Carrie White versus Lisey Landon, and we have Beverly Marsh versus Holly Gibney.
Who do you guys think is going to come out on top in the next round?
Our listeners.
That's what a cop-out. And that's it for this episode of Dear Public Radio. Join us for our next March Madness. We will see you later. Hey everyone, CM Alexander here. Thank you for listening to March Madness episode 2. We hope you enjoyed it. I have a little extra thing for you at the end of the episode, but first, don't forget to share your brackets with us on Facebook or Instagram at Dairy Public Radio or X at Dairy Public. You can also email us at dairypublicradio@gmail.com. As always, check out our merch on our Etsy store. Search Dairy Public Radio at etsy.com. Join our Discord for fun conversation with us and other King fans. The link for that is in the show notes. And if you need more episodes while we're on our break, follow us on patreon.com/dairypublicradio. We have lots of tier options and you can get something cool at each level, including access to tons of bonus episodes. We release an episode every other week at the $5 and up tier. And if you're reading along with us right now, you know that we just wrapped our coverage of 11/22/63, and we were so taken with the idea of Moxie that Josh got his hands on some cans, and we tried them live in the studio. Here's what we thought of Moxie.
Fuck, I love that sound.
All right.
All right, well, let's give it a shot.
To March Madness.
To March Madness.
L'chaim. Well, it smells like medicine.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm,
it is root beery.
It does taste like if root beer and medicine had a baby.
That's exactly what it tastes like.
Huh.
I could see how if you were given this and said that it would make you feel better, your brain would be like, yeah, it tastes like it makes you feel better.
Which is an interesting way of saying it's bad.
That tastes like medicine.
You know what's weird, though?
Hmm.
I'd drink more of it.
Oh, I'm gonna. I bought a 12-pack.
I could see myself craving a Moxie.
And if you'd like your own Moxie, go to boxofmaine.com and order it, just like I did.
A boxy a Moxie.
Send us money, please.
Send money, please.
That's all for now, listeners. Goodbye.